Several years ago, a member of my church at the time brought me a cartoon that showed three wise men dressed in regal garb. Of course, they were riding camels. In front of them, in the top right corner of the frame, as if to remove any doubt, was the Star of Bethlehem. One of the wise men is holding a small chest with the word gold clearly labeled on it. Another is carrying a container marked myrrh. And that wise man on his candle turns to the third, who is carrying a package wrapped in paper and tied up with a bow, and asks, "What scarce, rare, impossible to obtain, precious, valuable substance do you bring?" "Tickle me, Elmo," he answers. Now, this was 1996, the year of the Tickle Me Elmo craze. Hard to believe it was that long ago. Ever since, it seems to have set the standard for the must-have toy of the season. And according to some of the stuff I've read, it seems that a successful Christmas, from a commercial perspective, almost depends on having not one, but even several scarce, rare, impossible to obtain, precious, valuable items in the marketplace, preferably one for every age and income bracket. But that cartoon also begs another question. Why not a Tickle Me Elmo for the baby Jesus? Or, for that matter, this year's Toy Industry Association Preschool Toy of the Year, the Rainbow Loom, for the child lying in the manger. After all, it's not so different from the other gifts, really. Why not a Tickle Me Elmo, or a Rainbow Loom, or a brand new iPhone 6? It would make about as much sense as any of the other gifts that were placed before the child. After all, what do you give a baby who will become the King of Kings? You've heard by now that today is the day we celebrate the Epiphany of the Lord, a feast day which actually arrives later this week on January 6th. Epiphany marks the conclusion of the 12 days of Christmas, and in many parts of the world, Epiphany is a much bigger deal than even Christmas. Epiphany is the day when the world recognizes, when the whole world recognizes that the child, the baby, the promised Messiah of Israel, born in Bethlehem, is light for the whole world. On Christmas, as you remember, only a small circle of folks knew who Jesus was. But now, on Epiphany, the whole world comes to know and celebrate the news that for you, the whole world is born a Savior who is Christ the Lord. Our reading from Matthew tells an amazing story, and there is a lot of fodder for sermons here. I promise I'll only preach one of them today. We could hear a sermon about Jesus being the fulfillment of ancient prophecies, like the one we heard in Isaiah. We could hear a sermon about how Herod's reaction to the news of a new king brings instant conflict and a real threat to the status quo. Or how the Magi are changed by their encounter with Jesus, going home by another road, never to be the same again. But this year, I found myself thinking about the wise men and their gifts. And no matter what else we may say about those gifts, we have to say this: Jesus doesn't have much use for them, not lying there in the manger. The wise men would have been far wiser had they used one of those personal shoppers from Macy's, or if Mary and Joseph had registered at Target, or put together a wish list on Amazon.com. Anyway, these were pretty useless gifts. But then again, what do you give to a king? Have you ever noticed how many of our Christmas carols deal with that question in one form or another? What gift can we bring? One of my favorites of the season is In the Bleak Midwinter. which ends one of its verses like this. What can I give him, poor as I am? If I were a shepherd, I would bring a lamb. If I were a wise man, I would do my part. Yet what can I give him? Give my heart. What do you give to the King of Kings, to the Messiah, to the Savior of the world? When you sense that you are called and summoned and loved and saved and given life by this God who comes to us as one of us and becomes flesh for us, what can you possibly give as a gift? What can you offer in return when you have received the gift of God's very self? It's like this. God has given us the greatest gift in the world, the gift of Jesus, who is the Savior for the whole world. And we fumble around in our pockets and search the stores looking for something worthy to give in return. But like the blanket that's not quite big enough so that you're always cold, our gifts often can seem pointless and even useless. God's gift to us is just too great, too wondrous for us to find a gift worthy in return, so maybe we don't offer anything at all. All we can do, as the Magi did, is to thrust forward our pointless presents, a bag of gold, an offering envelope, a bottle of perfume. Maybe that's always the way it is with our gifts that we give to God. All our gifts that we offer in worship, our praise, our singing, the words of our prayers, this church, the cross above us, all of it, just gold and frankincense and myrrh. All we can do is offer to God what we've got at the moment, the gift of our singing, even when our voices falter or are out of tune, our money, even if we're not millionaires, our time, even if it is limited, our love for each other, even if it is imperfect. After all, God gave us what God had. Having given us so much before, God now gives the world himself. What can we give in return? What on earth do we have to match that? Reminds me of one of my favorite stories from the Gospel of Mark. When a woman comes in and extravagantly wastes a whole bottle of expensive perfume to anoint Jesus. And the disciples cry, "What a waste!" But Jesus says, "Leave her alone. She has done a beautiful thing. She gave what she had. She did what she could." These, it seems to me, are the best gifts. Not those gifts given in expectation of something in return. Not those calculating gifts that can be used for something else. The best gifts come as a playful, pointless overflowing of gratitude and joy. And do you know why? Because when a gift is so impractical, even pointless, the gift that you are really giving and receiving is the love with which the gift has been given. I don't know what impractical gifts that you might have to give to God this year. For some of you, it will be teaching in church school. For others, it will mean giving more money to God through the church. For still others, it will mean volunteering in the food pantry or going on a mission trip. It may be that you will give rides to those who need them, or take flowers to someone who is in the hospital, or perhaps you'll simply write a note to someone who you haven't seen for a while to let them know they are loved. The gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh, will take many forms. But in them, in their giving, you will be giving yourself. So my question is like the question of that second wise man. What scarce, rare, impossible to obtain, precious, valuable substance do you bring? I suspect you already know the answer. It's you. That is, after all that God really wants. Thanks be to God.